So with me, please, at the heart of our teaching, the science of mind and spirit is the concept of oneness. This oneness manifests as our wholeness and interconnectedness. With this in mind, there is no source of information outside of us that may influence us without our agreement. Everything in the world can then be seen as arising from our shared reality, not as something to be conquered, but transcended and transformed through our understanding and love. While we tend to our responsibilities in the world by diligently washing our hands, we must also mindfully strengthen our awareness of oneness and trust it to inspire us with the appropriate actions that match our spiritual wholeness. Do you get that? Because the thing that's craziest and scariest and most dangerous and damaging is not a virus. It's not a virus in the physical sense. It's the mental virus of fear. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't do the appropriate, smart, reasonable things, like washing our hands. I can't believe the people don't wash their hands normally. But hey, you know, who am I to say? So being a responsible human is not contraindicated by being a person who follows the teachings of the science of mind. And as Mile High Church says, the science of mind and spirit, because that's how they talk about it. So take this home if it resonates with you. Put it someplace, you'll see it. Maybe read it while you're washing your hands. So I want to repeat the piece out of 365 Days of Richer Living that Shelley read earlier, and I want to expand and read the entire paragraph because it's quite magnificent. The secret of self-mastery is a simple one. It is the clear concept that creation begins and ends within the consciousness of the individual experiencing it. Mind is the only cause, and law is the only process. The law does not work with our dreams and visions. The law works with what we really are. It brings forth into visibility our real understanding of ourselves. We are in control of our worlds only when we are definitely watching our thought and directing it in law. We are always the centers of our universe. God never looks down on us. Good always looks out from the midst of us. The psalmist, who was not necessarily David, we'll just call him the psalmist, reminds us to wait upon the Lord. And Lord, most effectively, is translated as law. This means to stop a moment and decide whether the idea you are giving to the law is a good one and a divine one. So I'm happy to report that a number of the home study groups have already started. And there are a couple. Jeff's starts this week, so if you still want to join a group, you can join Jeff's. It hasn't started yet. He wanted to delay a week, which was excellent. And the groups that exist already, if you signed up and you didn't show up, it's not too late to join. And this crazy book that we're reading this month, Into the Magic Shop, it's really quite tremendous, right? It's a story of this one guy's trip, travel, passage into self-mastery, which is living from a place of our choosing rather than being driven by something outside of our control, which is what I'm going to talk about today. Living from a place of our choosing. We decide, we move in that direction, and we act accordingly to that decision that we made. So I do want to talk a tiny bit about James before I get going. And that is, as a young child with no family support, like zero family support, he had no sense of self-awareness, no sense of self-respect, no sense of self-compassion, self-love, anything, not a clue. He didn't even know that he had a self because he had no background. And as he works with his guide, she starts him with noticing that he has a body and teaching him to pay attention to the fact that he has a body and he has the ability to control that. How many people do we know that are in that same spot? And how easy it is for us to fall into that when we forget, right? So those of you who are present last week or who listened to the recording of last week's talk may remember towards the end, I asked how many people who were present had had the gift of someone being a guide for them when they were young, somebody to support them, somebody to see them, somebody to be sort of treat them like an individual that mattered. This is one of the things that James gets as a huge gift. This random woman who happens to be at the magic shop treats him like a human being. And that opens up possibilities for him that didn't exist before. So how many of you raise your hands if you had somebody to treat you like that when you were coming along? Now, how many of you have been able to do that for somebody else? Because the end result is the same. Whether you're the recipient or the giver, if you are the one engaging in paying attention to another human as though they matter, they're reflecting that back to you. So we always have that opportunity, even if it's just 2 seconds at the grocery store or the gas station, and just paying attention to that human as a person, not a thing, not a function, but actually as a being that matters. So this is one of the things that we can do for ourselves and for each other, even in a time of no touching. We can still engage in noticing and paying attention and being present and being attentive with the people in our sphere. So, to me, having a guide, and I use that word like it means something. I was probably 12, and there was this adult couple at the church that I was part of when I was 12, and they decided that they wanted to work with young people. I've never told this story before, that's weird. And it was so amazing to me because it was like, I'm not just Tom and Cindy's daughter. I'm actually seen as a person in my own right. And I can't tell you how powerful that was. Because it's like, well, I don't know if I want people to look at me. You know, because they don't know who I really am. But they could see the value in me as a human, as a being of light, or as I like to say, a being of light and sound. And each of us has had that experience or can imagine it. And for people who didn't, I also recognize that I get a lot of guidance and support and instruction from people that I read and study. So even if I had not had that push, encouragement from human people walking around deciding I was worthwhile, I also get that regularly from the stuff that I read. And why does this matter? Why does this matter? What's the conversation sound like in your head? When Ruth asked him about his inner dialogue, he didn't know what she was talking about, because he had never paid attention to the fact there was a conversation going on in his head. The Foundations class, this is one of those love-hate things, the Foundations class this week got their assignment to listen to their self-talk. Those of you who have had Foundations know what this means. Which is to say, you know, set a timer on your phone and have it go off every so often and find out what you're thinking. Find out how much of the time you're critical to yourself. Well, that was a stupid thing to do. Whoever taught you that you could, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Having some positive voice offset that negative dialogue helps us learn to be kinder, more compassionate, more caring, more human to ourselves. Right? I'm looking around the room because there's so much negativity that comes as part of growing up. And part of it's historical and, you know, collective consciousness and all that, because our parents were raised that if you don't stick up, you won't get hit. This is a different teaching than that. Each individual is a unique expression of the one life. That life is God's life. The hosts read that every week, and it is the truth of who we are. And we have to counteract that negative programming. We have to counteract that negative self-talk, that negative judgment that gets in the way of our full expression of our lives. Because it does. If you've got an interior voice that says, who are you? Who do you think you are? To be able to, you know, fill in the blank, whatever your blank happens to be. We have to, no, we don't have to. We can be pitiful if we want. Nobody says, stop being pitiful. Well, they might, but they're not likely to. We are the ones that have to empower ourselves to say, no, that's an old story. It never was true for me. I believed it for a while. And I can stop it now. And if we haven't ever learned what to do about those critical voices, we have no way to hear our own true and authentic voice. And we have very little chance of being our true and authentic selves. Ernest Holmes from The Science of Mind, page 267. Humanity has not yet evolved into a complete understanding of themselves. They are unfolding from a limitless potential, but can bring into their experience only that which they can conceive. There is no limit to law, but there appears to be a limit to what to humans' understanding of it. As their understanding unfolds, their possibilities of attainment increase. So what do we do with this self-criticism? The challenge is some part of us believes it could be a little bit true. First, we have to notice it's there. And then we have to decide that even if it is a little bit true, it's not the entirety of who we are. And therein lies the biggest challenge, I think, that any of us have, because we have to realize that that one voice, that critical voice, is not our truth. So how do we step into something else? We have to find some way to, I started to say sneak around it, but find another way around that voice, to see what's behind it, to see what's being protected by that critical voice. Because there is an essential part of each of us that has never been damaged, that has never been harmed, that has never been restricted. It's like this precious jewel. And this guard that's standing there at the door saying, "You can't come in, you're not allowed," is protecting this precious self. So we have to figure out a way to get past our own guard and find access to our own sense of preciousness. In James's case, Ruth first tried to get him to blank his mind by focusing on his breath, the way that Dr. Andrew Weil and the Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh prefer. Focus on your breath, focus on your breath, focus on your breath. What didn't work for crap for James? He couldn't do it. It wasn't enough substance. So then Ruth had him watch a candle flame. The candle flame worked for him. He could actually make it past that critical voice, that noisy guard, by watching a candle flame. And he could disappear into that flame and see the reflection of his own light. And so that worked best for him. Then she had him make up a mantra. Now, I know there's a whole lot of stuff about mantras, and you have to have one given to you by somebody important. But the truth of the matter is, that's not true. You can make one up on your own. It can be a complete nonsense word. Or a couple of words that go together but don't really. Because the point of it is to give your brain, your perfectly useful brain, something to focus on, to distract it, to let your true self blossom up. So, how many folks in the room have a mantra? Or two or seven? People often use short affirmations as mantras. That works. Something that will give you a tool to give your brain, it's almost like mentally twiddling your thumbs, right? Giving your brain something to do. Giving it a point of focus to quell the noise. I think of it like tying a knot at the end of my rope and giving me something to hold on to. And practicing your mantra in good times is very, very important. Because then when difficult times come, it will rise up on its own. So this is the thing. We practice when life is hunky-dory and things are fabulous, so that when a bad day comes along, we have something to use. We've already embedded it in our consciousness. Dr. Edward Vion of CSL Santa Rosa, who's now spiritual leader for all of CSL, he got elected last month, told a story at the convention the other week in Denver. One evening during the conference, his partner, Kevin, decided to walk to the grocery store to get snacks or something. And it was icy. It was very cold. It was the coldest night we had when we were in Denver. And so he walked to the store, and Edward stayed back in their Airbnb. And Edward's phone rang, and it was Kevin, and he said, "I've been hit by a car, come." Okay. So fortunately, Edward had Find a Friend on his phone, Find My Friend, which is an app, apparently, that I don't have on my antique phone that I like. But anyway, he didn't know where Kevin was. But he used his Find My Friend app, and he followed his app to the street where he could see all the police vehicles and ambulances and stuff. And he's standing on one side of the street, and the pedestrian sign is saying, "Don't walk, don't walk, don't walk, don't walk." He's like, "Crap, don't walk, don't walk." And there's cars zooming past. And he felt one of his mantras rise up like an engine, one that he had practiced since forever. And he said he felt it rise just like it was an organic thing. And it's a mantra that you know. We say it virtually every week. Actually, we say it every week. There's only one life. That life is God. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. Imagine if you embedded that enough in your consciousness so that when the shit hit the fan, it would show up. And what would be the result? Peace. Calm. Chill. So while Edward was standing there waiting for the pedestrian light to change to green so he could get over there to the paramedics to see what was actually going on, he felt his blood pressure drop. He felt his sense of calmness rise. He felt a sense of order in a circumstance that didn't have a whole lot of order in it, because that was already embedded within himself. And it came up without him asking. So then the light finally turned green, and he finally was able to cross the street. And as he approached the paramedics to find out what had actually happened and what was going on and what needed to be done next, he felt his interior dialogue to shift. And it went from running the mantra, "There is only one life, that life is God, that life is perfect, that life is my life now," to another one. "Everything I need to know about what lies before me is available to me through the mind of God within me." Isn't that amazing? "Everything I need to know about what lies before me is available to me through the mind of God within me." Is that something that could be useful right now? So repeat it with me. "Everything I need to know about what lies before me is available to me through the mind of God within me." Again, "Everything I need to know about what lies before me is available to me through the mind of God within me." It's big, right? One more time. "Everything I need to know about what lies before me is available to me through the mind of God within me." Individually and collectively, we are each encouraged. I started to say required, but required isn't a word in my vocabulary. So individually and collectively, we are each strongly encouraged to find alternate programming. Because there's a whole lot of counter-useful programming available at the moment, right? And finding the ability to find alternative programming is the beginning of self-mastery. By persistently, consistently managing our own minds, being in charge of what we think, how we choose to view the world that is going on around us, is how we are able to be in charge of ourselves. And this doesn't diminish that we wash our hands, and it doesn't diminish that we stay home if we feel poorly, right? We are still in charge of ourselves. And there's no magic bullet in this. There's no amulet or magical words of protection. It's actually much simpler and more challenging than that. A big part of self-mastery is being honest with ourselves and congruent and self-aware. Knowing what you actually believe and working with your own consciousness releases any unbeliefs that you uncover and gives you the chance to grab a hold of the capital T truth for you. And that's what self-mastery is. And that's what's actually being asked of all of us now. Being master of our own selves. And the CSL in Seattle is shuttered today. They're online only. Because they're in that space of the country that is having an outbreak of this virus, and the community emergency management system has asked them to not gather. So they're not. And so they're having services only virtually, only online. And if it comes to pass that we end up in the same place, then we'll do the same. But in the meantime, it's our job to master ourselves and master our minds and pay attention to what is good physical practice and what is fear that drives and is more dangerous. So I want to close with two quotes. One from Charles Fillmore from a little book called Keeping a True Lent. The funny thing was, the first time I saw this quote, somebody said it was Frank Herbert's Dune. I liked it better as Dune. I can hear it. I can hear it in that character. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I face my fear. I permit it to pass over me and through me. When it has gone past, I turn to the inner eye to see the path where the fear has gone. There will be nothing. Only I will remain. And then from Ernest Holmes, from a little book called Prayer, I conquer and control my mental household and cast out all fear and doubt. I let my word cast out all sense of fear and doubt and let my thoughts be lifted to the divine who lives within. My word dissolves all fear within me and has cast out all doubt. My word guards my thought and makes me receive only that which is good and perfect. I control my life. I control my life. You control yours. Remember that. Grab hold of it. As often as needed, wash your hands. And grab hold of that truth known to the divine that lives within you. I love it when microphones go. Here comes Philip with the salvation of my microphone. Yay, Philip. So now that we've switched microphones and I killed the batteries in that one, we'll do the prayer and then carry on. So hold on to that truth of who you are. Park that fear voice aside. Park that critical voice aside. Tell them that they may be in the car with you, but they don't have permission to steer. They can't even touch the radio. And they definitely can't touch the brake. Breathing in and out. I settle into this divine space. And I remember the wholeness, the presence, the power, the joy that lives at the core of me and of everyone. I celebrate this divine mind and this opportunity to remember the truth, the magnificence of life. And to remember this presence that operates in, as, and through me and everyone, and gives each the power to master their own experience. So from this space of wholeness and allness and isness and wellness, I bless this day. I bless every individual. I bless every experience. I know it is good and very good, and I let it be. And so it is.